better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Welcome back into the Morning Rush. We're brought to you by Southern Tire Mart.
You know, this time of year can be hectic. A lot of things to do. Everybody on the go and heading into the holidays. It's not going to lighten up anytime soon. How about Southern Tire Mart? They can help save you time and money right now with America's most trusted tire brands like Michelin and BF Goodrich. Take advantage of Southern Tire Mart's $29.95 oil change, which includes a thorough 27-point vehicle inspection. You can stop at Southern Tire Mart right now at I-540 at exit 14 in the River Valley and take care of quality Michelin and BF Goodrich tires for your vehicle and the best in-class service. Get what you need and get where you need to be with Michelin and BF Goodrich tires from Southern Tire Mart.
By the way, you know what this song's from? Now it's over, but the one that was playing, I know Maddie T knows it, but do you know it, Tom? I figured this would be a song you'd know from a movie. Any idea?
I wasn't listening close enough to tell
sorry.
You.
Sorry.
I was
the good,
the
bad, and the ugly.
Good, the bad, and the ugly. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't know if you were a Western fan or
I like Westerns.
Okay. Spaghetti Westerns. Clint Eastwood.
Oh, Clint Eastwood. Yeah. John Wayne.
Well, I mean, you can like both. Yeah. You can like both. But yes, John Wayne is the most iconic. But yeah, that's what that song's from. So I didn't know if you would.
I watched True Grit this week. You know, the original John Wayne one since
We're
in the area now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Even though I don't think it was technically actually filmed.
No, it's clearly not filmed in Fort Smith.
But the new one was.
Yes, so. That's right. Which both were great films, by the way. So yeah. But
parts of the new one. Let me be more specific. Parts of the new one.
Yeah, that's right. So, but yeah, have to have some theme music in here for the morning. Rush.
They don't make Westerns anymore, though.
Which is a shame, because I feel like there's such a universe there that you could really still explore. Mm-hmm. That made a great one since Tombstone.
When I was a kid, my grandfather, my mom's daddy, if you came in the house at basically any hour of the day, any day of the week, there was going to be one of three things on. If it was a weekend, there was going to be football or baseball on.
Mm-hmm.
And then any day of the week, there could be baseball on. He did not like Harry Carey, but he watched the Cubs because either the Cubs or the Braves were pretty much on because of TBS or WGN or a Western or maybe a war movie. That's what was on.
Yeah.
So I watched a lot of Westerns as a kid because, that's what was on.
Oh,
Gunsmoke. Those are kind of Westerns.
Yeah. What was it? The Rifleman? Was that?
Rifleman.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember growing up.
Chuck Connors.
Yeah. Yep. Chuck Connors. And, I mean, my dad was always a big, like, McClintock fan back, you know.
I think my fear of snakes began there because I remember being like 4 or 5 years old and there was one of those Gunsmoke or one of those. And there was like, there was one of those episodes where like someone got bit by a snake. Or something. And that was where my fear of snakes probably began. Probably need some therapy for that.
From Gunsmoke.
And then what was the series?
Bonanza.
Wasn't that. I'll think of it here in a minute. It's like a three-part series. Golly. Anyway, the guy fell off the horse because the horse got bit by the snakes, and he fell into a nest of snakes. Somebody will help us here on the text machine. And
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know that. But, yes, Westerns are great. I don't know. I need that's one of those early Saturday morning things, like even before college game day starts. Lonesome Dove.
Lonesome Dove's it.
There you go. Look at that. Oh, my goodness. We just blew up with
Lonesome Dove's it.
All at once. So there you have it.
I can't say the other famous line from Lonesome Dove.
Well, that's all right. Tell me off the air. I've never seen Lonesome Dove, so maybe that's something I need to watch.
Well, Lonesome Dove's a great, it's like a three-part series. So it's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Craig and Greenwood, Josh and Harrison, and you, whoever you are from the 479.
That's a bad deal where the guy falls in like to a nest of water moccasins. And
I wouldn't think that'd be an ideal situation.
Curtains for him.
I wouldn't want to be in that situation.
Well, I was a little older when that came out, but was not. If you don't like snakes, you won't like that scene at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I will avoid that. And I don't know, maybe this Sunday or something, I'll have a little marathon.
Oh, you'll need more
Westerns
than Sunday.
You know, it's one of those long ones then?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look into that. It may have to be something I watch. But as fun as Westerns are, which we all love them, we were talking about of course, with the Razorback football, and it's a What's Your Beef Wednesday, and we've had some people submit their beefs. If you want to do that, be sure to call or text Cherokee Casino Hotline, 877-377-6963. But the question I had this morning is, of course, dealing with Chad Morris in Arkansas. They're taking on Auburn this Saturday at 11 a.m., and Arkansas is not going to win this game. Auburn is too good of a team. They're coming off of a bye week.
Yep.
Their only loss this year was to Florida in a fairly close game down there in the swamp. I just don't see in any way, shape, or form Arkansas wins this. And it's crazy to think about it. If you just look at, since Gus Malzahn's been at Auburn, which has been since 2013, Arkansas has only beaten Auburn once. Mm-hmm. And that was in 2015 in quadruple overtime. So even in the game you won, you needed some good luck on your side.
Magic.
Yes, needed some magic on your side to win. So we understand that in the matchup itself, Arkansas is not going to win the game. However, the question then becomes, for everyone who has been calling and texting in and saying that they're done with Chad Morris, that they're done with it, they want to move on, which I, again, don't disagree with you, don't have a problem with you saying that, but can any sort of faith, any sort of hope be restored to some people this weekend against Auburn besides just winning the game? Like, can they play really well, be very competitive, even in the fourth quarter, and that be able to restore some sort of hope for Razorback fans? Is that possible?
Yeah, I think if you were, I know the Kentucky outcome was very disappointing, but if you played this game to 24-20 and you lost, would you be satisfied? If you played this game like you did the A&M game, would you be satisfied? I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, I understand how the Kentucky game came out, and you're not playing Kentucky this weekend, but if it was 24-20 Auburn and Auburn won by four, you'd be happy with that, wouldn't you? You'd feel like there was some progress and that what we're seeing is a team getting better.
Yeah.
A program advancing, that you'd have a little more faith that, you know, Chad Morris and this coaching staff, maybe they do know what they're doing. Because right now, I think if we were able to run a really scientific poll better than Twitter.
What's better than that?
It'd be like 90-10. If you just simply put out, and this would be a totally unfair, unprofessional poll, does this coaching staff know what they're doing? It'd be like 90-10. No. You know, but if they kept it like to a 4-point game, you'd turn that maybe to more like 60-40, though.
Yeah. Well, and because all you have to go off of right now is, first of all, you've had some straight losses. Like, you haven't won since Colorado State. Three straight losses for you. And in each of those losses, something was taken away from it that has been able to put you kind of in a roller coaster, for instance. And what I mean by that is San Jose State, when you lost that game, good grief. Just blow it up. I mean, it was the worst type of loss in the worst type of fashion you could possibly have. Everyone's mad. But then you play Texas A&M the next week. And you still lost, but yet there were still some people that said, hey, game was close. They were in position to win it late. This was a perfect opportunity. Maybe they were able to move on from that terrible San Jose State game performance and get things going and try to get some things righted. And you did that heading into the bye week, which it was looking, and when you looked at it just on paper, like, this is the perfect situation, or at least the best situation you could have in the SEC if you're Arkansas. You're heading into the bye week. You're getting guys healthy. You have an extra week to prepare for a Kentucky team that's kind of limping right now, that doesn't have a quarterback. It seemed like it was all perfect. And then when you put in the performance that you did on Saturday, it was like in those three losses you've had straight, every single one of them you've lost differently and has triggered a different emotion.
Yeah.
So people don't know what to feel right now.
Right. I tell you what people are feeling is they're still mad about San Jose State. And if you had beaten San Jose State, people would, that's the thing that they're still so mad about. You could at least have a little more understanding about Kentucky. I think people would understand A&M. They won't, not that they would like or accept losing, but they're ready to run this coach out of town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've taken the calls. We're reading these comments. Some of these we can't read on the air. People are mad. They are PO'd. I mean, they have moved. There are a lot of people that have moved on. And I think it all goes back. I mean, clearly it goes back to the San Jose State game. You win that game, and you bring the anger level down how much, John? Right now, the anger level with the fan base comes down how much? I'm not saying people wouldn't be mad about losing to Kentucky. But how much of the anxiety is removed if you have one more win right now?
I guess my first question would be, who would be the win against?
Well, San Jose State.
It would be San Jose State. Right. Oh, then because I think cut in half
it's
at
not,
least.
Exactly. It's because it's not the fact that you have one less win. It's the fact that the loss came to San Jose State. San Jose freaking State. That is still hanging with people, man. And that's what makes this even more difficult. Like, we just had a text come in. Matt was going through but one of the texters pointed out that would make it even, if we'd lost 24-20, that would make it even more difficult to understand how did we lose to San Jose State? I think that's what's so difficult about the A&M result being close and Kentucky being 24-20, and if Auburn ended up close, how did you lose to San? And that's what it all points to coaching then.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you lose that game? If you'd at least won that game, a lot of people's anger and anxiety. But you can't go back and fix that. That's spilt milk. Can't do anything about it.
Because unfortunately for Arkansas, they have been a part of some of these losses over the past, I guess, 8 years, we'll say, to where it has been embarrassing. And it's also been, when you lose those games, it's never, and I mean never, about not having the talent or not having the depth. It's always going to be coaching. When Arkansas lost to Louisiana Monroe, Tommy, in 2012,
mm-hmm.
was that because Arkansas didn't have enough talent to beat Louisiana Monroe?
That's because Tyler Wilson got knocked out of the game with a concussion.
And they didn't run the ball
right
after that. I mean, you just even if Tyler Wilson was knocked out, you should have won that game.
But you could say, that's an excuse. Well, I think it was a reason in that game.
Yeah, but I still think you were good enough to win without Tyler Wilson.
I agree.
So, but you taking that next step further and look at some of the other bad losses. When Brett Bielema lost to Toledo that year. Was Toledo much more talented than Arkansas?
That was a much better Toledo team than we thought going into that game. That they ended up, 9-3 that year? Mm-hmm.
But Arkansas went 5-3 in the SEC right. that year, mm-hmm. too.
No, they shouldn't have lost that game.
Yeah, but it came down to coaching. Mm-hmm. And it's just in the
they
same.
They weren't prepared for that game.
Right. And so that's my whole point, is that all these games that we have seen, that Razorback fans have seen and have been a part of, They know what the issue is. They know who to point to when that type of thing happens because they've seen it before.
Don't disagree with you.
And, you know, when you look at some of the great coaches, and again, I crap on Houston Nutt probably more so than anybody. I never liked Houston Nutt. But Houston Nutt, when you look at embarrassing losses that Houston Nutt had, they're almost nowhere to be found.
Now, and you can't hear it, but that was before Saban, or that was, well, we're not talking about those kind of games.
No, we're talking about losing to San Jose State type teams is what we're talking about.
He had some close shaves.
He did.
Listen, but he didn't lose them.
Yeah. I mean, his most embarrassing loss may be what? When he lost to Vanderbilt and Jay Cutler in 05?
UNLV and the
maybe UNLV. Yeah, that was a bad one too. Bowl. But you're talking about 10 years? You got lost maybe two?
Lost to Minnesota in the Music City Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, but those are at least Power 5 teams.
Right.
No. So, I mean, but my whole point is that Arkansas has been there before, and they've seen this before, and they know who to point the finger at. And I think that that's what made the San Jose State loss. Of course, it's awful for everybody, but why Razorback fans jumped so quick off ship for Chad Morris is because they know who the culprit is. They know what the reason is, and 100% it comes on coaching.
Right. And we're just in a different age now, and Houston Nutt was never paid $4 million a year.
No, he wasn't.
Three and a half now. Bielema was paid 4+. And the expectations are just higher. And I know the league's tougher, but you know, you keep losing these kind of games, and we see last week what the effect was. What happened right after the loss to Kentucky? One loss became two, because what else happened? You lost a big time recruit.
Mm-hmm.
Decommitment. Then the next day or 2 days later, you lost two more players. That one went into the transfer portal, one just retired from football or whatever. McClure. Then Bush goes into the portal. I mean, this thing just gets worse. So I mean, you lose recruit and two players off your roster. These are all just signs of, I mean, these are the kind of things that happen when things internally are worse than you think from the outside.
Mm-hmm. I even talked to some of the recruiting experts that are in the media here, and I was asking them about Devin Bush. Because I get Davion's McClure situation. All right, listen, I mean, you got a kid, you got a family, you got to take care of your business, man. I commend him for it. You know, I mean, that's something that should be respected. But the Bush thing with him leaving, it's like, man, I know that sometimes don't pan out, and I know that sometimes Rivals and 247 and all these places, they don't get it right. But to me, losing a guy like Bush, who had offers to pretty much any big time SEC mm-hmm. school. And you lose him because he wasn't getting playing time, even though he enrolled early in the spring because he was under the impression he would get a lot of playing time. Those are the things that start making you wonder, okay, is it a lack of ability by Devin Bush? Or is it the lack, maybe did the coaching staff promise this guy some things and they didn't deliver? I mean, you start questioning everything. Mm-hmm. And then it's like even when he had, I don't know if you saw the tweet, Tommy, but something we discussed about Briston Guidry. You know, he used to play for Arkansas, but he left football back in May. When he's tweeting out stuff of like, man, things I'm hearing from my teammates, I don't like.
I'm not going to put a lot of stock into that. It's a very nebulous tweet.
I know, but why would he put it out
there? I understand. Well, some people, because he wants you talking about it on the radio.
I guess
mentioning
so.
His name.
Maybe so, but it's
just. I don't know. I just can't put a lot of stock into stuff like that. If you can't be specific, then very vague.
That's fair. But I'm just saying it's out there.
I understand.
When people see those things, that's what makes people start wanting to sound the alarm.
But we're only left to draw a conclusion. That's not fair either to the coaches.
No. But again, it's all coming at the worst possible time.
I know. But that's a compilation. But no one wants to kick you when you're up. They only want to kick you when you're down.
Yeah, because they can't kick you when you're up. They can only kick you when you're down on the ground for sure. Morning Rush brought to you by Sassy's, my favorite place in Fayetteville. It is fantastic food, folks. I go there. I'm going to be making the trip up to Fayetteville this weekend for the Auburn game. And I know a lot of you will be as well. And if you need a place to eat lunch and or dinner, which I know you do, head over to Sassy's. They have two locations in Fayetteville off of College and off of Weddington. It's still barbecue season because barbecue season's all the
13
time.
13 months a year.
That's right. It never ends, and they have great barbecue options for you. Try the brisket tacos. That's probably what I'm going to do as my appetizer and then go into the barbecue nachos as my...
Messing it up, John. Wings. The smoked wings.
Well, I can do all of them, can't I? Listen, I mean,
you're going to stay for the game. You got time to do them all.
Yeah,
correct.
And Tommy has given me the corporate credit card. So
that's right.
I expense that stuff. So that's fine. I can make it work.
Expired in 2009, but he didn't know that, folks.
I want to make sure that I get some great food, great options, and that's what Sassy's has with their two locations in Fayetteville, off of College and off of Weddington. So if you're driving up there, head over there and get you some good food, and you'll probably see me. And if you do, get the John Neighbor special while I'm there. Let me see the reaction.
Nick Mason says best catfish on Weddington.
That's right. They got great catfish options as well. I mean, they got everything that's great. So just you can't go wrong when you go with Sassy's. But, you know, we got a few people that have been texting in to the Cherokee Casino hotline, 877-377-6963. Corey and Roger says the problem with Kentucky is that they didn't take 2 weeks to prepare for the first week. They gave the young guys reps. And, you know, Corey, it's interesting you bring that up because – I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not at all. But I do find it so fascinating where if you're a bad team, if you're losing games, everything is put under the microscope and criticized. You know, it was the same thing last season when Chad Morris was flying down to Dallas to watch his son play football on Friday nights in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would have given two rips about it if Arkansas was winning.
Nope.
But when they're losing, all bets are off. Everything you can possibly find, you're going to bring to the table and be like, well, here's my problem with this. You know, if the teams weren't ready on Saturday, maybe Chad Moore shouldn't have been watching high school football on Friday. I mean, that was just the fact of the matter. And so there's a lot of these situations where people will be bringing up. And again, I'm not saying you're wrong, Corey. I'm not saying that, you know, that's not an issue. I'm not. I'm just saying that those are the things you don't hear about if you're winning. That's never a problem if you're winning. And it's not even like you're winning every game. But if Arkansas was 4-2 right now, which I think we all agree they should be.
Right.
They should have beaten San Jose State, and they should have beaten Kentucky. Right there are the two games they should have won. Then I don't think anybody is sitting here losing their minds. In fact, I think, Tommy, if they're sitting at 4-2 like they should be, we're all heading into the Auburn game saying, hey, not saying they'll win, but if this happens and these things go right, you know, they may have a chance. They may have a fight.
After the Colorado State game, people said they weren't headed in the right direction, but I think it was described on the show they were pointed in the right direction. I don't think anyone believes this program's pointed in the right direction after San Jose State and after Kentucky. People weren't wringing their hands so much after A&M, but two of the last three have really got people concerned.
Yeah.
And it's not the loss against Kentucky as much as it is the decision-making. It's the in-game decisions. It's not the fact because there weren't a lot of people predicting a win at Kentucky. They thought it was a possible win. I would say less than half of you out there thought that the Kentucky game was going to result in a W on the road. You know, just a lot of us preseason thought Kentucky, A, would be better than they've been. But the fact that you got beat by a wide receiver playing quarterback, and you just, we've talked about the end of the first half and the decision-making there, the lack of, or the waiting too long to make a decision to make a change at quarterback, some of the play-calling decisions. I mean, we can go through it. We know what the decisions or the lack of timely decision-making resulted in this game. It's those things that got all of us concerned about, can this thing ever get right? Because some of these things are just deep in the DNA of where you're at right now. I mean, that's just, will any of it ever change? I know it's just year two, but a head coach that operates under these guidelines, I don't know that even in year 4, 5, 6, 7, I mean, I don't think more time's going to change the way he operates. Mm-mm. That's my concern.
Mm-mm. Because you can't afford more time. Like you can't, Tommy, you can't afford another year of this.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying a third year is not going to make his decision-making quicker or with less consternation, I guess.
So with that understanding, which I agree with you, but with that understanding, does that mean that this cannot be turned around, that there cannot be hope restored? Because those have been the things that's been plaguing this team. If those things can't get figured out, is there any way to restore it?
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Of course, it is a Wednesday, so we're going to be having a What's Your Beef Wednesday here on the show. And if you want to submit who or what you're beefing with today, be sure to do via the Cherokee Casino Hotline, 877-377-6963. So without further ado, let's get into What's Your Beef Wednesday here on The Morning Rush.
What is wrong with you?
I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain. I'm
complaining.
I want to complain.
It really pisses me off today.
To simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
I'm so mad I could eat ball bearings and crap BBs.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
All right, it is time for What's Your Beef Wednesday. Danny in Russellville, who called in earlier in the show, kind of took part of mine, but that's okay. I'm going to dive into it a little more. I think it's obvious that if you want to go with the Razorback football team as being your beef, that's fine, but I'm going to switch it up. And I'm going to go with LeBron James. And I know that this has been talked about, discussed, debated on several different shows. And even in the political world, it's been talked about. But listen, this whole thing with the NBA in China has been kind of disturbing. Because, you know, listen, you want to have peace and you want to be able to get along with everybody as much as possible. But there just are some places and there are some governments that, you know, here, especially in the United States of America, just can't be supported and can't be something that you're all in on, or at least come out and be supportive of them. And when Daryl Morey of the Houston Rockets, this has been a story that's been going on for a few weeks right now, when he's coming out and he's just in support of the anti-government protests that are happening in Hong Kong, simple tweet, and the NBA is acting the way they are, where they're trying to ride on both sides of the fence and say, well, freedom of speech and all, but I don't necessarily agree with it. We know that Adam Silver came out and Steve Kerr came out. like those comments I didn't really agree with, but you know, that's what they way they want to handle. LeBron James, who is without a doubt, Tommy, is the biggest name in all of NBA. I mean, he's about as big as you could have of an athlete, period. I mean, you could make arguments that he is the most iconic current athlete, professional athlete in the world right now. I mean, you could definitely make that argument.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he coming out and when, because he had a whole week to prepare for this statement. He had been silent and everyone was looking to LeBron James because LeBron James has had these shows. He's had the shop, as he likes to call it, where they talk about things, not just basketball, but politics and social life and all of that. So everyone was looking, all right, he's got a comment on everything. He's got a statement on everything. What is he going to say about China? Well, what he came out and said was not only did he have issues with, you know, the way the handling of what Daryl Morey said and all that, he understands his free speech, but he came out and he was against what he said and says he needs to be more educated on the matter. He needs to, before he speaks, he needs to know more about the situation. And as if that wasn't bad enough, he then takes to Twitter after that comment came out and said, listen, me and my team had a difficult week this week in China. With all the things going on and all the comments, we had a difficult week.
Sure they did.
I'm sure. You know what? I'm sure they did. But my whole thing is like, to say it that way and to see how it's been handling by not only LeBron but all the NBA is just goes to show you that the NBA, who's been really adamant that saying that they want to come out against political foes and they want to come out and be outspoken about social issues and political issues and all of that. They want to be that type of league for them to come out and now clearly show that they're about the money.
Yep.
It's not about the message. It's not about being outspoken against wrongdoing. It's not about any of that. It's about the money. It's hypocrisy to its fullest. And I wouldn't have respected it, but I would have even been a little more okay with if LeBron James just came out and said, you know, it's a situation I don't really want to talk about. You know, I don't want to get into that. I don't want to talk about it. No comment. Moving on. I wouldn't have respected it, but I'd have been like, okay, it's probably smart on his part. But to take that stance, to say that Daryl Morey is the uneducated one, the one that he shouldn't speak about things like that before he knows the situation, it's just, it's disgusting and it's stupid. And it's just another reason why I feel like the past couple weeks, the NBA and now LeBron James probably more so than anybody has taken serious hits, and I don't really know what the outcome is going to be because I don't think they're going to apologize. They understand it's going to affect the bottom line if they don't come out and try to handle it the way they are. I mean, Tommy, well, the amount of money they make in China is astronomical, and they know it, and that's why they've taken this stand. So don't ever tell me it's about coming out and being outspoken. Don't ever tell me it's about standing up for what's right. It's all about the money, baby, and you've proven it the past few weeks.
It's a huge TV market, as we know, but it's really about the shoe companies and their foothold there with manufacturing shoes and their presence in a country that means a lot to the shoe industry. But I don't think this plays well in middle America where the NBA is large and huge in cities where they have teams. You know, in the big cities, you know, in the big markets in this country, because there are, what, 30 NBA teams? You know, in those big 30 cities, the NBA plays well. You know, in the flyover part of the country, I don't know how big a, you know, in Arkansas, you know, we're fans of certain players, particularly former Razorbacks. We're big Bobby Portis fans.
Yeah.
We're big Joe Johnson fans when he's in the league and gets you back in now. But
even Patrick Beverley.
Patrick Beverley, but, you know, this is, I mean, I'm not saying there aren't NBA fans listening. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that we're not big NBA fans as a whole in this state. We're big Razorback fans.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't take kindly in these parts of the country, rural parts of the country, to taking shots at democracy, you know, and not standing up, and more importantly, just not standing up for democracy.
Yeah.
We don't like it when you take a stance that's anti-American or has the perception that it's anti-American. Don't like that too much. The NBA already struggles in certain parts of the country because it just we don't have a connection, and because we're not connected to a market. It's easy when you're in Dallas or if you're in New York or if you're in Chicago or you're in Memphis even or Oklahoma City. Those are better examples that are kind of at our back doors, depending on which side of this state you live in. But even that, that's a stretch. Even if you're in the western side of the state, Oklahoma City, somewhat of a stretch of how connected you are to the Thunder. Or in Little Rock, I mean, you guys live there. How connected were people in Little Rock to the Grizzlies?
I mean, kind of casual, if anything.
Casual, if anything.
Yeah.
But your affection and your allegiance to them was not going, I mean, this kind of stuff irritates because we're patriots. You know?
It's freedom.
Yeah.
It's if you want to simplify it to its utmost, it's freedom.
And you would think the NBA would take a lesson, would take a page out of the book and learn, and they haven't, from what the NFL went through with the kneeling during the national anthem. I'm not saying this is the same thing, but it's starting to walk a little bit down that same path that the NFL went a mile down with Kaepernick and the kneeling during the national anthem and all of those things. The NBA don't need to go down there because it cost the NFL greatly. I mean, ask DirecTV how much refunding they did on the NFL package, on the Red Zone package. I mean, the NBA don't want to go there to start their year.
No, they don't. I mean, I get that everyone's going to have different political stances.
This isn't political, though.
That's going to be my point. This goes further than that. This goes against the simple freedoms that we as humans should have. Human beings, human race. And just the way that they've handled it has just been, it's disgusting.
Well, it's about absolutely money. Disgusting. It's about money over basic human rights, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's about protecting Nike. It's about protecting shoe deals. It's about protecting, I mean, again, follow the money and you'll follow people's true intentions generally.
Yep. And listen, I'll be curious to see how it impacts the NBA going forward with this stance that they've taken. You know, we'll, like you said, this state itself and where we're at is not huge NBA, but there's NBA fans, there's NBA markets, there's people that love players. What about those television rates? Are those going to be impacted by this? Is sales of jerseys going to be? I mean, just what type of impact is this going to have taking this stance is going to be my question.
Nike has already found themselves, you know, having to make tough political stances and decisions. Yeah. And this is just another one that they keep losing and eroding a little bit of their fan base and their customer base a little bit more. I think this is another hit Nike takes eventually because they can't get out of the way of this thing either. They're going to get caught up in this.
Yeah. I mean, this is just, I think it's just bad all around for everybody.
I mean, they got caught up in the Kaepernick deal.
Mm.
And I think this is another example where we all know somebody that quit buying Nike products over that, or at least threatened to. And I think a lot of people did.
Yeah.
Particularly the older demographic.
But, and again, some of these things can be comical as far as how people react to it. But, you know, the whole thing with Nike, for instance, you know, one of the big marketing deals they had was about with Colin Kaepernick. And they said that had his face. And then in the caption, it said, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. To which a lot of people have changed that to believe in something unless China tells you not to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how it feels right now. So it's a long answer, but I feel like that's something that a lot of people have been beefing with. I've been beefing with it. I'll see how it plays out, but geez, LeBron James, you're an idiot. You're an absolute idiot. And you're all about the money. Don't ever tell anybody else that you're about, you know, standing up for what's right. You're about the money at the end of the day.
About the money and about taking care of Nike.
That's right. So, exactly. So, all right, what's your beef, Tom?
Well, it's about the Cardinals. I mean, just...
one more lighthearted.
I mean, the Razorbacks, we've just spent so much time on that.
But I know.
Just such a disappointing thud of an ending. After you thought you'd maybe found the bats a little bit in that first inning against the Braves, and I understand the Nationals have some great pitching, and they put it on full display. But my goodness, what a weak effort! What a weak effort in the NLCS. What a poor way to end the year. But you know, I guess proud that you got this far and you were in the NLCS. But you'd like to put up a little bit more of a fight. I guess my beef is just you get there and then you just lay an egg.
Get swept.
Yeah, you get swept. But it's worse than swept, right? I mean, they finally, in the middle innings, got some runs on the board, but gave up 7 in the first. I mean, it was over. You were essentially, what you did to the Braves to get out of the NLDS was done to you last night. It was over in the first. I mean, no sense in watching past the first. So
yeah, they scored 6 runs in 4 games, and 4 of those 6 came last night.
Right, but came in, what, the 5th yeah. inning or whatever it was? I mean, it wasn't even worth keeping up with after the first inning when they gave up 7.
Yeah.
7-0 in the first.
Hey, I mean, what the Cardinals weren't expected to beat the Braves, right? So at least there was that element.
Right, but put your gloves up. At least put a fight up.
Which I get. And also the Nationals have kind of been known for completely and totally, like, blowing it in the playoffs.
They didn't start out well this year. I heard Ruskin talking about this a little bit yesterday, and he is a Nationals fan and has been with them for a while, even when they weren't as good. And you know, they have pitched awfully well and got it put together this year. They're going to be a hard out. So
do you have a rooting interest now that the Cardinals are out? No,
not really.
Not the Nationals. Not the Yankees. Not the Astros.
Yeah, I guess maybe the Astros.
Closest in proximity.
Yeah,
I guess. Kind of, yeah, I wasn't all that interested in it as it was, but now it's really been taken out.
Trying to think, Keuchel's not with the Astros anymore. He's with the Braves. So, I mean, do you really have are there any former Razorbacks? Am I missing anybody?
Not that pops into my mind.
Any former connections there that I don't really know?
No.
Yep.
I don't think so either.
So now you go to friends and family. I guess you go, I don't know. I don't really care.
No. So, I'm with you.
I'll watch just because it's the World Series.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that one. So you're beast the Cardinals.
Just disappointing. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. That's fair.
Not that they got beat. Just the fact that they didn't show up.
If they would have gone to the World Series, would you have gone to a game?
I'd have made every effort. Yeah.
Okay.
Just because it's the World Series. Yeah. You know.
So they haven't played in it since 2011, right?
No. They played in... What year was it? 2014? I have to look it up. They played the Red Sox. They lost to the Red Sox in the World Series. Is it 14? 14 or 15.
Okay. I mean, like I said, I'm completely and totally oblivious
they've been to the World Series since then.
To what they do and how they do it. I mean, it's...
You ought to know they played your Red Sox.
They're not my Red Sox. You've said many times.
You claimed your affection for the Red Sox.
No.
The Red Sox and the Dodgers.
I casually root for them if they're there. That's all I do.
Sounds like you're a homer. Oh, sounds like goodness. You're a fan.
2012, I believe, was when it was. I'm sorry. I'm just telling you. I don't try to be one of those guys that comes out of the woodwork and starts tweeting out and cheering on, yeah, those are my Red Sox. I don't own a... I couldn't even tell you. I could probably name 2 players on the Red Sox team, and that would even surprise me. So no, don't try to put that on me. But I'm sorry that your Cardinals lost, Tommy.
Yeah. At least they were in the. At least they had a chance at a pennant. So
yeah, barely, but still had a chance at it.
Watch Your Beef Wednesday brought to you by Wave Rural Connect from Arkansas Valley Electric. Are you an Arkansas Valley Electric customer? Well, soon they're going to be bringing high-speed fiber-connected internet service to you along with TV and phone service as well. Go to Wave Rural Connect and find out how soon service will be in your area. This Friday, they're going to have a free lunch for you at their Van Buren location. Stop in and see them at 5600 North Highway 59. That's north of Van Buren between 11 and 2. Now, if you sign up for service this Friday, they'll waive the $100 sign-up fee for those that sign up the event this Friday. They'll have hot dogs, chips, and soda, so this is going to be a great time to come out and find out more about the service as Phase 1 is rolling out with Wave Rural Connect. Go to Wave Rural Connect and find out when they're going to be connecting customers in your neighborhood. That's Wave Rural Connect from Arkansas Valley Electric. Wave Rural Connect, powered by Arkansas Valley Electric. WaveRuralConnect.com.
So if you want to get in your beefs on this What's Your Beef Wednesday, go ahead and text into the Cherokee Casino Hotline, 877-377-6963. By the way, the years that, of course, we get text whenever we're trying to think of something. It's 2013 was the time the St. Louis Cardinals and Red Sox met. So, no. Sorry, I didn't know that. Sorry, I didn't know that. This comes from the 479. He says that he has 2 beefs. Says, one, we are going down the NBA rabbit hole. Who cares? Tommy, you just said we aren't an NBA state. We don't care about this crap.
Yeah. We weren't talking about NBA. We're talking about LeBron.
Yeah.
It's like we don't talk about golf, but we talk about Tiger.
That's right.
There's a difference. LeBron's bigger than the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't talking about the NBA. We didn't talk about one dribble, one play, one anything. This is bigger than the NBA. This is a social issue we're talking about here.
And he also says, yeah, I agree that LeBron is an idiot, and that could have been it. Okay. And then he says the second beef is that these Razorback fans trying to sell tickets for face value or more. Have you seen this team play? Who cares what section your tickets are in? You should be paying me, including cash for concessions, to take your tickets. I haven't ran into
any. Why are you wanting to go if you get out of here? Get out of here.
Oh, man. This, comes...
I mean, listen, this is a year where you shouldn't be. I agree with a lot of that. I mean, listen, you feel bad because you've invested the money. You bought the tickets. You paid the hefty donation. And, you know, you bought the stock at $100 a share, and it's worth 20 now or 10. And you'd like to get some of your money back. And I get it. Give the tickets to someone at your church. Give them to someone at work. Give them to someone that doesn't buy tickets, that never gets to go, and write it off as goodwill. That's all you can do right now. Now, you're not going to get face value. You're not going to get your, you know, people that are trying to sell them for face value plus a fraction of your donation, you can forget that. Ain't happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
You might get face value if they're like between the 40s. Maybe.
Maybe.
That's a big maybe.
Yeah. Don in Greenwood text in says his beef was with the problem we were talking about with Chad Morris's family not living here in Arkansas, because it gives the impression that even though Chad thought his time here might be limited, we have become the premier spot for coach to get a job. I'm not understanding that. Yeah. Win a couple games, lose 15 to 20, walk away a millionaire. Well, I think that if Chad Morris is fired, no matter what, he's going to be walking away a millionaire. Yeah. He's already a millionaire.
It's a tough deal when your kids are ingrained in a high school. They're ingrained in a school. They have friends. They've played in a system to uproot your kids when they got a year or two left. It seems like they're near the finish line. You've went to school in a certain place. Now listen, particularly when you moved your kids around, and I didn't grow up in a military family, or my dad didn't have a job where we moved from city to city. I know we got a lot of people that, you know, your parents or you served in the military, so you moved town to town, or your parents had jobs where you moved frequently. You were transferred often. That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and coaching's one of those kind of professions where, you know, you'd like to finish in one place where your kids get to go to high school and finish out 3 to 4 years in one spot. Sometimes you make that deal with your kids. Hey, this is the place I'm going to be. And then when dad ends up taking a job elsewhere, you know, you have the financial means to kind of let, you know, make a tough decision for mom and the kids to stay in one place and dad go to work in another so that the kids can finish high school in one spot. It's not just about football. Sometimes it's just about your kids socially developing and you know, I don't know what the Morris family, that's up to them. That's a family decision, not a football decision.
Yeah. I have not had an issue with this.
No, that's off the table for
me. Yeah, and because it's like, listen, it's his family. And whatever's best for your family needs to be best for your family. I have no problem with it.
Yep.
So those who keep bringing it up as far as that's some negative
against
him. I don't
have a problem with him watching his kid on a Friday, because he's been other places too. It's not like he's only at his kid's game and hadn't been elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because that's not true either.
Exactly. And I'm sure that a lot of you who are parents out there, and if you can remember back to when your son was playing high school football, did you miss any games?
Mm-hmm.
Did you make sure that you were there? It's the same thing. You know, I just, like I said, I don't have any issue with that. I don't think that that's a problem. Joe in Centerton says his beef is all the Razorback fans saying year one doesn't count for Morris when he was hired, and now you want to use it against him in year two. I haven't heard any Razorback fans really say that. I don't think we have anyone calling saying that year one doesn't count for Morris. I think it absolutely counts.
Oh, no, that's been said before.
Really? I haven't heard it.
Because he didn't really get to... He didn't really get to put his fingerprints on that first recruiting class, that very first one, because it was really a bad time to hire a new coach, because that was the first year of the early signing period.
Yeah, I thought
he came in with days. I mean, not weeks, days till the early signing period.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot all about that. That was not ideal. Not ideal in any regard.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Arkansas is taking on the Auburn Tigers this Saturday, 11 a.m. in Razorback Stadium. The game will be on the SEC Network. Arkansas trying to figure out some answers, and they're probably finding the worst time to play Auburn, coming off of their bye week. sitting at 5-1 in the number 11 team in the country. And to help us talk more about and preview this game from the Auburn perspective, we welcome in to the Cherokee Casino Hotline, Justin Ferguson of The Athletic. Justin, appreciate you joining us this morning, man. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Well, we're doing well. We've been having plenty of content to discuss as Arkansas has been sitting at 2-4, 0-3 in conference. Hasn't been going well for the Razorbacks, but I do want to start right now with Auburn because they looked like just a team that was a force to be reckoned with through the first five games, and I think that they're still a really good team, sitting at 5-1 with that one loss against Florida. Just what's the overall vibe like for Auburn fans halfway through the season of how they feel like the job's done by Malzahn? Are they really pumped up and excited about the season? Just what's the overall mood over there in Auburn?
It's a mostly positive view from Auburn, because I think if you'd have told a lot of Auburn fans heading into the season, hey, at the halfway point, you're going to be 5-1 with a true freshman starting quarterback, you'd be like, all right, that's pretty good. I mean, that would say acceptable amount of success that we would want to see this year from this team. I think the problem is that right now you still got a bad taste in your mouth if you're an Auburn fan from what happened against Florida. Auburn's offense couldn't do much of anything. Bo Nix had his worst game yet and just made a lot of freshman mistakes that he had really avoided the first five games in the times they were winning. So it was just kind of all the bad that could happen for him on offense did it in that one game. And it was the main reason why they lost and looked so bad against Florida. So that game really kind of, you know, switched some things up, I think, for certain members of the fan base, because you win that game, you're 6-0, and you look down to the stretch of the season and say, hey, well, if we just beat one of either LSU, Georgia, or Alabama, we could easily get a 10-win season. But I think Auburn fans are looking at it now and saying, okay, you know, if we couldn't get it done against Florida, what are we going to do against LSU? And then get Alabama coming in later. And I know Georgia looks a little bit more susceptible, but they've been a tough team always for Auburn. So it is kind of just a little bit of a wait and see, because I think that Florida game kind of reset some of the expectations for the rest of the season for Auburn.
I know what Malzahn's answer to this would be, but I want your answer, Justin. How do you think they spent the bye week? Getting ready for Arkansas, who's a two-win team, or kind of peeking ahead to the second-ranked LSU Tigers, who is a huge game and would keep Auburn alive in the chase for the Western Division, the college football playoffs, and like you said, that 10-win season?
Yeah, I think they spent the off week, you know, getting ready for the second half of the season in general. I think Arkansas, you know, they're a team where Auburn comes into this game saying, you know, if they take care of business and they play to their potential, they should be able to, you know, beat Arkansas, you know, without too much trouble. But they do know that last year that Auburn did not move the ball well on offense at all against Arkansas. And that was 34-3 was the final. That was because of defense and special teams. It was the worst offensive performance of the season for Auburn. John Chavis has been a thorn in Gus Malzahn's side. I think Brandon Marcello had the stat this week where it was like Chavis has been the defensive coordinator in four of Malzahn's 11 worst games, you know, calling plays or being an offensive coach in college football. So, you know, they wanted to focus on getting a little bit of a head start for Arkansas. But I think mostly it was just, hey, they've got to get together a better game plan on offense for the second half of the season. And that starts with Arkansas, but it also includes trying to figure out what they're going to do against LSU and then Georgia and then Alabama later in the year. So it's kind of more of a holistic thing looking in the second half of the season. But they appreciate getting a little bit of a head start on an Arkansas team that at least defensively gave them some trouble last season.
So just from your perspective, what do you make of Arkansas and Chad Morris this season? Because Razorback fans, by and large, are ready to jump ship and move on after starting 2-4. They haven't won a conference game. They lost to San Jose State. They lost to a Kentucky team that didn't even really have a quarterback. They had to play a wide receiver. Things are just really bad here in the state of Arkansas for the Razorback football program. From your perspective, what do you make of the situation that Chad Morris finds himself in year two?
I mean, it's really, really tough, because I look at Arkansas, and it's just the talent just isn't there to really compete in the SEC West right now. And you know, part of that is kind of what Morris inherited, and I don't think it's gotten a ton better these last couple of years. The thing that stood out to me these last couple of weeks about Arkansas is that, you know, you lose to San Jose State, and you look as bad as you did probably earlier in the year. And they the first game of the season, you know, it was a lot closer than people expected it to be. They kept fighting, and that's something Malzahn said yesterday, and that's something that's been pointed out, you know, the times I've been able to watch Arkansas this year, that A&M game, then Kentucky last week, is that you know, the talent's not there, but the team itself is not, you know, folding it up and just saying, all right, we're done. Which there's something to be said of that. And I know the Arkansas fan base is desperate for a winner and to get it back around. But I mean, this is talent wise, I think there's a big rebuild for no matter who is the coach ahead. So it is a really tough spot for Morris. I think the fact that he hasn't quite lost his team yet is something, there's something positive to take away from that. And I don't know if they'll be able to win an SEC game down the stretch this year, because I just don't know if they'll have the talent to do so. But, I mean, they probably should have beaten Kentucky, and they had a really good shot to beat Texas A&M. So I think, you know, just in the fact that they keep fighting is at least a positive thing, I would think, if, you know, looking at this Arkansas team.
When you look at Auburn and look at the depth chart, one thing that jumps out at you week in, week out, and again this week, is five seniors starting on the offensive line. It's something that always is – it goes into a formula for a winning football team and a successful football team as an experienced offensive line. Give us some more details on how they've played and really kind of what has been the base of Auburn's offense that's allowed a freshman quarterback to have the success he's had this year.
Yeah, I think the thing about Auburn's offensive line this year is that consistency is the thing that's kind of eluded them the most. They've got a lot of experience, but there are some games where they don't look like they're really executing well enough in the running game up front. I think the first half against Oregon, first half at times against Texas A&M, the whole game against Florida, they really had a hard time getting the ball moving on the ground. But then there are other times where even in the same games, and you saw it a little bit late against Florida, team can find ways to generate a good running game. So last year, Auburn's offensive line was the main reason why they struggled so much. This year, they're better. They're not an elite offensive line, but they're a solid one. And so they've done a good job in pass protection to let Nicks kind of get comfortable in certain games. Again, it really didn't happen against Florida, but for the most part, it has. But yeah, that offensive line it's you know, good in pass protection, can be good and run blocking, and it's just, did this off week kind of get them, you know, a little bit more focused up on, okay, here's the things we really needed to work on, here's the things that we're doing really well, because there's been times this season in most every game they've played where they look like they're capable of leading a really good Gus Malzahn offense, but I think it's just consistency, and I'm very interested to see what Auburn does this Saturday against Arkansas, because they need this game to, they need to go out and have a really good game on the ground, I think, to set up what they're going to have to do either in order to have just any sort of shot next weekend in Baton Rouge.
Well, and the thing about Auburn is just looking at their schedule, it's incredible. I mean, the fact that they, of course, have to play Alabama and LSU in their division, but then their two East opponents were Florida and Georgia, the two best far and away opponents in the East. So the schedule has not been kind to Auburn. But knowing the schedule and knowing the talent that they have and the type of team that they are, Are they good enough to win the West? Because it's still open. I know that obviously LSU's looked really strong. You've had Alabama that's still going to be Alabama. But is Auburn good enough to win this division this year if things fall their way?
You know, I think their defense is good enough to keep them in every game and give them shots to beat LSU and Alabama. You know, I think as good as LSU and Alabama look on offense, and man, they look outstanding this season. I think Auburn's going to be the toughest test either of those teams face. I mean, just the way Auburn is playing defense this year, and it starts with a defensive line that is probably the best in the country right now. I think the defense will keep them in a lot of games. It's just going to be a question about can the offense with a freshman quarterback, that inconsistent offensive line, do enough to hang with those big-time offenses that, you know, Auburn will give them some trouble, but you need to know that you're going to have to score a good bit of points to keep up with LSU and Alabama. So, you know, it's definitely possible. We've seen this happen twice now under Malzahn. You lose an early season road game. You regroup. You hit in 2013 and 2017. You play Georgia and Alabama at home. You're on the table and you go to Atlanta. It's going to be a lot tougher this year because you had to go to LSU on top of already taking that tough loss at Florida. So I don't think this is the year Auburn gets to Atlanta just because of the way LSU and Alabama are playing on offense and the fact that Auburn's still having to build in some areas on offense with their skill position talent. But I mean, they at least, if they can, you know, if they can get to November and beat Georgia, at least they'll have a chance to be a pretty nasty spoiler with a shot at 10 wins this season, which with a true freshman quarterback, that is exactly kind of the season Gus Malzahn needed after all that hot seat talk so surrounding him last year and heading into this season.
Yeah, when you look at it, it always stands out. I mean, when you got one guy that has a single digit on the defensive line, that stands out. But when you got three guys, Derek Brown, number five, Big Cat Bryant, number one, Marlon Davidson, number three. You know they're good when defensive linemen have single-digit numbers. That just always stands out to me. I mean, you mentioned they're the best in the country. That just goes to show you how good they are when you got single-digit guys and you got multiple single-digit guys on the same defensive line.
And there's another one who's a backup defensive tackle. There's a number eight in there as well, Adonis Miller Jr., who's actually been playing a little better these last couple of weeks. But, yeah, it is exactly the way Auburn wants to play defense, and this is kind of how they build their roster. They get the elite talent up front, keep them in school and develop them, and then try to, you know, get to the passer and stop the run with the strength on that defensive line. You can do a lot of solid things behind them on defense. Yeah, this is the culmination of years of recruiting and development and just keeping guys around. We're seeing it. I mean, Derrick Brown's playing that number five, playing like an All-American this season, and it's gone a really long way into getting Auburn to the position they're in this year.
All right, before I let you get out of here, Justin, just looking at this game in particular, Racetrack fans aren't expecting much out of the Razorbacks. I think the line has moved to 19.5 points. Auburn is favored against Arkansas and Fayetteville. Just what do you think happens in this game? How do you think it goes? Do you think that this is another matchup where a Malzahn offense struggles a little against a John Chavis defense? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough game to kind of predict in terms of, like, what the final score will be. I think Auburn wins, and I think Auburn wins solidly. I think the big question is they got to be able to run the ball. And can they get some consistency on that offensive line? Can Malzahn have, you know, kind of stay a step ahead of what Chavis is going to try to do on defense? You know, Booby Whitlow, their starting running back, is out for the next few weeks with having knee surgery. They've got three running backs they're going to try to rely on sort of a rotation. Can one of them kind of emerges, okay, this is the guy we need to rely on for the next few weeks. So I expect Auburn to run the ball a good bit. Not to say Bo Nix isn't going to throw it, but I think this is going to be kind of a run-heavier game, which will probably put the score a little bit down. But, you know, if Auburn's defense plays their game, Bo Nix doesn't turn the ball over, I think this is going to be, you know, a win where Auburn covers and gets a good win, but I don't necessarily see, you know, Malzahn trying to, you know, hang 50 or 60 on Arkansas in this game, just because they're going to run the ball, I think, a good bit. And also because, I mean, I think there's something to Malzahn and Chad Morris's, you know, friendship that I don't think Malzahn necessarily wants to kill, you know, a Chad Morris team if he doesn't have to. So I think it's going to be a focus on the running game, and it might have to be a little bit of a quicker game, which would be a good sign for Auburn.
Justin Ferguson, writer for The Athletic, covering Auburn. Really appreciate you hopping on with us this morning, Justin. Enjoy the game this weekend, man. We'll catch up with you, all right?
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
I appreciate it. Justin Ferguson and all guests join us via the Cherokee Casino Hotline.
You know, an amputation or severe injury can leave you feeling left out of the game, but JP&O Prosthetic and Orthotic Labs are there for you. Today's prosthetics will allow you to live a full life and participate in all the activities you like and enjoy with technology to improve gait and movement. JP&O has braces for back and knee injuries as well as other joint injuries, along with periodontic services for foot injuries you may be suffering with. JP&O has locations in Harrison, Mountain Home, Batesville, Branson, West Plains, and the Rogers, Fayetteville area to serve you as well. JP&O Prosthetic and Orthotic Labs, solutions, support, and value with world-class technology and services. He brings up the friendship angle there between Malzahn and Morris, and I partially agree with him that Malzahn won't go out of his way to run it up on Chad Morris the way he would have on a Brett Bielema team, yeah, given the opportunity where there was probably no love lost there. But in today's world, John, with the college football playoff committee, and let's just face it, score differentials matter. Auburn already has a loss. Now, they do have still LSU, Georgia, and Alabama on their schedule, but score differentials matter. And they have that loss, and they're trying to get into that top four at the end of the year. Does Auburn need to score enough points in this game that if you're coming down to it and you're a one or two loss team at the end of the year and you don't know what the rest of the schedule is going to look like with other teams, do you want to make sure you have enough of a win here this week to impress the committee if needed at the end of the year?
I don't think so.
I don't think Malzahn's not the kind of guy. Friendship be damned. I don't think he takes his foot off the gas. You've got to, when you're already kind of behind the eight ball a little bit, you got to make sure you have an impressive enough win at a place like Arkansas.
Yeah, and I don't think that comes into play as much in college football, because I don't think that at the end of the day, if they end up going 10-2 and they're trying to think about maybe possibly if something crazy happened in college football, putting them in, I don't think they're going to look back and be like, well, they did beat Alabama and LSU, but and they might beat Arkansas by two touchdowns. Like I don't think that's going to be the case.
And let's not forget, it may not just be one of those top four spots in the playoff.
But a New Year's Six
Bowl. Six Bowl is what the committee's also deciding on as well. So
I think they just look at wins, man.
I think differential matters. I don't know that whether you win by 35 or 42 or 49. I think there's a cutoff at some point. But I think we also put too much stock in that, and I think we also put too much stock in this friendship angle as well.
Yeah, I do too, because listen, they're both professionals. Like Gus Malzahn wants to beat Trad Morrison, beat him handedly. Like, let's just be honest. Friendships or not, this is a business. This is the SEC. There's no friendships. Listen, there's a reason why Nick Saban is undefeated against his former assistants.
Yep.
He wants to beat them.
What is it, 18-0 now?
Yeah.
After last week?
Yeah, I mean, listen, they can be friends. They can be cordial to one another. But at the end of the day, they want to crush each other. It's a battle. It's a war that you go out there with. So, yeah, I don't buy into that. However, I did find it very interesting that he brought it up, and of course he mentioned how Brandon Marcello brought it up as well, is that four of Gus Malzahn's worst offensive performances, I think four out of the 11 worst offensive performances by Gus Malzahn as a head coach at Auburn has come against the John Chavis defense,
mm-hmm.
which if you look at last year, and he brought it up, last year the worst offensive performance Auburn had all year long was against Arkansas. And it's not like Arkansas was a good team. So I thought that was pretty fascinating. That's not going to say, oh, now Arkansas is going to win. Yeah. But I will be interested to see if maybe this won't be as high scoring of a game as maybe what we thought originally. Because that's a great stat. Maybe there's something about John Chavis that ends up being some sort of matchup nightmare for Gus Malzahn and his offense.
And Gus, I mean, Gus runs a tempo, but at the end of the day, it's just a variation of the old wing T. You know, it's a spread run with a lot of eye candy. And a lot of people want to claim that John Chavis, the game's passed him by, and it's old school. Well, there's a lot of old school elements to what Gus likes to run.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really about six or seven plays with a lot of variations on it. It's really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe for all you critics of John Chavis out there, this is the kind of offense that he's more adapt to.
Now,
we'll see if they can get to the freshman this week, and we'll see if they can rattle Knicks a little bit. So far, only Florida's been able to get to him a little bit.
Yeah, and to throw this factor,
not much.
Throw this factor in as well. Auburn's averaging about 230 yards per game rushing, which is huge. And they only have 193 yards passing per game. So obviously they're rush heavy. They have lost their best running back, I'm just calling him Jay Whitlow. We'll go with that one. Whitlow was second leader in the SEC in rushing at the time he was injured. He's going to be out for this game.
Right. Knee surgery.
So they're going to have their best running back where their offense has been predicated on having a great rushing attack. Now, again, I'm not saying Arkansas is going to win this because of this fact, but it'll be very fascinating. That'll be the match that people need to watch, seeing how this defense matches up against the Gus Malzahn offense, because also, at least unless I've missed something, the defense is going to be, for the majority, pretty healthy. At least healthy enough to have their key players going
to
be in this game.
Need Scooter Harris to have a big game.
So maybe that spread, Tommy, of 19.5, once we do our Vince Man picks, may switch it up a little bit.
We'll see.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.